activist for women in exile for 2 years and a half now. I like being with women in exile organization because women in exile, they fight for refugees, women, people who cannot speak for themselves.
Another thing, there are some women here. They came by the sea. They lost their families in the sea. But then you tell them, go back to Africa. You imagine they came, a husband and the children, but then one has survived. You deport that person. You can imagine how painful it is.
Das wir kämpfen für gegen Rassismus und kämpfen für gegen Diskriminierung. Ja, und kämpfen auch für gegen Gewalt. Ja. Und unser Slogan ist keine Lager für Frauen. Alles Lager abschaffen. Ja, weil im Lager die Frauen sind sehr isoliert und sehr diskriminiert.
Today I'm honored to welcome Elisabeth Ngari from Women in Exile as my guest on Manipod, our Rosa Luxemburg podcast on migration, anti-racism and migrant struggle, broadcasting from Berlin. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Massimo. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. We know each other since 5 years now and had quite some cooperations along your projects, actions and struggle. And today we are talking in a specifically problematic and dangerous historical situation after 1.5 years of pandemic crisis. We want to come back to the question of the Lager system in Germany and especially about the situation of women within this inhuman system. But before we get to that, please tell us a little bit about your group. How did everything start? I think you founded Women in Exile already 20 years ago.
Yes, we founded ourselves as Women in Exile in 2002. And we did this because we realized we as women were more disadvantaged by these refugee discriminative laws. And what I mean by that is that, okay, we were all in the same, living the same laws of residence freezed, of not getting permission to work, not getting chances to go for schools and all this. But on the other hand, the life in the camps, or living in the camps, but the life in the camp was very difficult for women. So we realized that the women were, like I said, doubly affected by these laws. And by living in the camp, they were just, it was like a three-time problem for the women, for because they were, we were living in this, we have to share accommodate rooms. First of all, the camps are very, crowded. And you have to share a room like 4 people. If you have a family, you have 1 room with the family. So this is one of the problems with the women. And this living in the camp is forced onto you. You are supposed to live there. You don't have an alternative of having housing, especially when you don't have your asylum case is still going on. And so we decided to... One of the things also we experienced as women is that we had a lot of conflicts, not just between ourselves, but also with the men inside. Like the men will come and most of them, they will sexually harass you, they will attack you or just, you know, pick a fight with you. So there is no respect between the people who are living there, so there are always these conflicts. There are also the other problem of sharing the facilities, like kitchens, like the bathrooms, like the corridors where you are meeting. And because of people not having very much perspectives with their lives, you find that we used to say the people sleep during the day, but at night the people wake up, they start drinking. So if you have children, especially children going to school, it's very difficult for them because they don't get enough sleep.
Yes.
Or when they go to school, even the teachers ask them, you know, like some of them do, and then they say, yeah, we didn't sleep well at all this. But nobody looked into these problems.
What was your situation 20 years ago? Why did you start at 2002 Where were you living, for example?
You've
been in a lot of it.
Yeah, I was in a camp in Prenzlau that time. Some women from... We got in touch with women from different camps in Brandenburg, from Prenzlau, from Hennigsdorf, from Kivitz. Those days there were so many camps in Brandenburg. Some of them have been closed now, but there were so many. But we decided to go from one camp to the other and talk to the women to find out what is, you know, if there was something different in these camps. But we realized we were going through the same things. We realized we made some interviews with the women and they were telling us, yeah, here the it's like a prison. Okay, we are living in a prison. It's like a prison. No, it's a prison. You know, this type of things, because you are supposed to stay there. You don't have permission to move because of the residence freeze. You don't have work to do. You cannot actually, you don't have a life, you are just there. So all these traumas and depressions because of this life, and then on top of that, what you are going inside there, this is actually one of the things which made us like say, okay, we go out and talk about these things, let the communities know, let the politicians know that we know this is not what we are supposed to go through. We have some lights, like people living in this society, and we should not be isolated. We should not be, like discriminated against. We are living in this society, so give us an opportunity to prove ourselves.
There was a topics in the province 20 years ago, but there's still today the same topics. 20 years of struggle. What would you say?
It's true, we are fighting the same things today. But I would say now the society is more open. I know the politicians are not very... because it's not the whole society when I talk about society. It's part of the society who listen, who are in solidarity, who are supporting our work and all these. But on the other hand, there are also the other conservative people and also, of course, the right wing, which there are some politicians who want also to please these groups. So there is always this thing of having very restrictive laws. And during our time, it was like this. And then somehow they relax them a little bit, like the residence fridge. You could now move from your district to another district without having to go to the house rider permission to ask for permission, because this is what we used to do. And then it came like, okay, possibilities of going like to do... like to train for something, like to work, not for the people who have been here for long, who has stayed for long. It came relaxing like this. And then
I remember in the 2000s, like the demand against the Residenzpflicht, to have the permission to leave your city boundaries was one of the major demands of the refugee movement in the 2000s.
Yeah.
Freedom of movement also within the country here.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, I also remember in 2000 we made a very big demonstration here in Berlin about the residence fridge, because this was one of the handles. Like, you want to move like us. Some of us are from countries where we needed also to go to different jobs somewhere outside. Maybe if you are in Brandenburg, you want to come to Berlin because you know, like, you can get your type of food there. But you have to go to outside a beholder. They don't even understand where you are getting the money, because we were using vouchers. And they will be like, no, I mean, where do you want to go to Berlin and all this? You have to give to the address of the person whom you are going to and all this. And maybe sometimes you don't even have a person where you are going.
Yeah.
So this was very difficult for us. And this, some of the demands we had, you know, like... abolish the residence fridge. Lager for us women is one of the most the topic which we as women and women with children really got into. because we saw also being in the lager with this accommodation, type of accommodation, it's our problems. We were being sexually harassed. We were being, actually, there are a lot of things. When we started going loud, talking with the women, we found out there were women who have been raped in the camps. We found that violence was against women was very much you know, towards women, but they didn't even have somewhere to go and complain because the where they would go is like to the police. I remember one who said, "No, I don't want to report. He's my brother and." If I report to the police, then he'll get problem, he'll be deported, you know?
Yeah, yes,
something like yes. this. And it was like, no, if he's doing this to you, he's not your brother. I mean, so some of these things, and this is where we came also with the idea of empowering the women to know also their rights, even in these camps. Like, okay, if somebody... you know, violates me, then I have a right to go to the police also, you know,
of course, yes.
and talk about it and have this problem solved or something like this. Otherwise, it was just here in the camp, and they will ask either the person who is in charge of the camp or the social work, and then they will say, do you want to report them? You say no, then their case ends there.
Yes.
You know, it's like also they don't want to go on with this, which is actually wrong because even in this society, we know women are very powerful. They can go, they can report these things, and they have fought for these things, and they have achieved a lot. So for us, it's like, okay, we are also living here, and we are women, so let's have some of these sorts of privileges you are enjoying, like, why should I be violated just because I'm a foreigner, you know?
In the early 2000s, I remember also was the high time of the No Border camps and like the anti-racist movements in the early 2000s, which was pretty big in this time.
Mm.
But then like 10 years later, 2011, you extended your group and founded Women in Exile and Friends, where you also included like non-refugee women within your networks.
Yeah.
How... did that come from, or why so late? I could also ask after 10 years.
Yeah, I think this was also because when we started also like going out, also going to festivals, going to more meetings, meeting other women and people who are feminist women or women, people who are fighting for women's rights, then we realized that they wanted to support us as women, because even before our group, we were in a mixed group, and for this it was very difficult because unfortunately the women who are the feminist women, the LGBT women, were supporting the men more. We were in the same group, but they could support the men more, and we also asked ourselves, how come instead of supporting women, they are supporting more men, and we realized that it was easier also for the men to move aloud than the women, because the women are there back in the camps with the children and all this, so they were more into contact with them. But then after going to some of these camps, doing workshops together, we said, hey, we want also support. And then this is when we sat down with some feminist women from Berlin and talked and see, you know, like looked into how we can work together. Because for us as a refugee women group, it was also very important that we have our autonomy. Because for us, we are the ones who are leading this problem. We want to bring them out. So because we also realize that most supporters, when they want to support, they want also to support you and be like part of them, you know? Like you go, if they are going to this meeting, you have to go with them. If they want to go to this meeting, they have to go with them. But we said we have our own problems, and we want to bring it to the society. you are welcome to work with us and we will work together. But at the end of the day, it's our problem. We don't want to be dominated. We want to bring our problems into the open, because we are the ones who are living these problems. And we can work together. So we realized at the end that there were some women who are more actively supporting us, and some were just maybe supporting us when we have an action and all this. So those who were actively supporting us, and we were also making like political strategies together. We also needed this a lot, actually, because these are also the same people who are in this society. They know how it goes. They know where resources are. They know.
Yeah, they have a lot of resources to bring in, I guess.
Exactly. And also like language and all these, and yes, also which politically strategies, how to go about them. So this is why we said, okay, these most active women in our who are supporting us from the feminist movement, then they are more than just supporters. They are like friends, because now we had started interacting well, and also, like I said, sitting together every other week or for meetings and doing these political strategies together. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the resources, they have them. We don't. We don't know where to go for this or that, but they knew. Yeah.
All right. 2011 was also just 1 year before the large refugee struggles in Germany and Europe in 2012. I remember the uprising of people in the lager in Bavaria, especially in Würzburg, and also in Austria, Vienna, with the huge marches to Berlin in 2012, then the occupation of Oranienplatz in Berlin, the very famous one that lasted half a year, like from October 12 to April 2013. And for me, in my opinion, I don't know if you would agree, was that like a crucial moment in refugee struggle 2012-13, the biggest triumph and the biggest defeat in the same time. How was your group involved in this action in 2012?
In 2012, when we heard about this march from Würzburg to Berlin, we sat with some groups in Potsdam and decided how we can support it. And we knew, of course, they are going to pass through Potsdam, or we got in touch with them, with these groups, and said, okay, you can also pass through Potsdam, we can support you. There were also like people who are working with people like we still work very closely with Flüchtlingsrat, and they also got involved. So we met all of us and see how do we support this march. So in Potsdam also we organized a very big demonstration, and I remember even some people from Potsdam went up to the border. It's Sachsen, or I don't know who is bordering from the south, bordering Brandenburg. They went to meet them there and took them coffee and all these things. They were welcomed in one of the camps in Potsdam, where we had also connection. We made a meeting one evening. Then the demonstration was the same the following day. And it was quite a big demonstration. We escorted them to the border of Berlin. And then we left them there. But we, as women in exile, because also as we started working with people in Berlin, and most of us moved from Berlin, from Brandenburg to Berlin, we are still also connected in Berlin. So even when the refugees camped at Oranienplatz, we were also very present there. We were going for meetings. I remember also from there is also where the International Women's Space came from, and we are also part of the people who started the International Women's Space. That time, I think it was International. I think they changed the name a bit, I don't know. But that time we started like language classes. Mm-hmm. There, two of our women are the first people who sat in that space to give information. We had some flyers. We started bringing women from Blood and Book in there.
So I think the women's space was created after OPLAS, right? After the occupation in the Gerhard Hauptmann Schule.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But still, the negotiations of having a space for the women at the school started also from the Oranian Platz.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. So we were. Yeah, I remember also we made workshop there together with the people who are there, and we were also talking about ourselves, our group. So, yeah, this is the connection we had with the refugees there. Of course, it became like bigger with the hunger strikes and all these. And sometimes it's very difficult. And I was asking myself, actually today, I was asking part of our group, how come the feminist fights don't go very far, or also the refugee fights, they go to whatever, and then they get, you know, there are not so many solutions which come out, and then we keep on fighting the same fights, like you asked me, like it was 2002, and
yes,
we are still fighting the same fights.
Yeah. And most people, when they think about refugee struggle, they think about 2015, Marches of Hope, the huge migration into Germany, but the large uprising were 2012, like a couple of years before that. But I also want to ask you about this 2015 summer of migrations, so-called, where also the slogan "Refugee Welcome" became so prominent among society. But as I recall, many of the refugees who were stuck in the lager since many years, already before 2015, were complaining or saying that they don't benefit from this new wave of solidarity in the country, and that there were like also frictions and discussions, problems. And I want to talk a little bit about that, about like the connections of the struggles of 2012-13 and then the new like solidarity phenomenon in this country.
I think when we talk also of movement, we can also talk about Caravane.
Yes.
Because they are also the people who also like started this like moving from one place to another, connecting refugees and these fights. I think they are also, we can also like talk about them. And in 2015, it's very, I would say the politics in this country, they are very discriminative. And they like, how can I say, even in the camp themselves, this is one of the things I realize, that even the social workers and the people working in the camps, they like making people, they like this divide and rule thing, because you realize that there are some, I would say like my time, it was during the time of the Afghanistan thing we are seeing today started. It is that the people came, and so the refugees from Afghanistan were very special. They were the ones who are being welcomed. They were the ones who are seen. I think it's this victim thing. Okay, you are the victim, so I'm here to help you, to welcome you and all this. And this brings conflicts also in the homes, because they, like I said, you realize the people working in the camps, they are favoring some of the people who are like this. And then came 2015 when the Syrians came in, and now it was the Syrians welcome. Yeah, you are victims of war, so you are here, we welcome you and all this. And at the end, now the Afghanistan refugees started complaining, and all the favors were given to the Syrian people. Of course, everybody has their own problem, and we know, okay, war or such things, they are more, we cannot compare to someone who just moves, because, you know, I feel also I don't belong, I'm not happy here or whatever, but everybody who moves from their country has their own problems. They just don't sit one night there and say, I want to go to Europe for you know, just to find out how Europe is. It's because you are going there because you have some problem or the other which are driving you away. If you wanted just to come to visit, then you take a visitor's visa and come and visit and go back. But this way, when you say, okay, I'm moving because of this, I'm moving because of poverty, I'm moving because there are clashes which are going on, I'm moving because I cannot even find a job in this place. It's, there are also problems. So I think this categorizing of, we only give asylum to people who are persecuted in their countries, maybe special cases like now war or whatever. They are the ones which bring these categories of, these are more worthy refugees than these ones are, you know.
I mean, this is the job of racism, to hierarchize different groups. And I remember many people from the refugee struggle who came from like sub-Saharan Africa, who are sitting in since 20 years in lagers, and it was a different media coverage about other refugees. But but I also know that there was a lot of solidarity and like common struggle amongst different groups. But as you said, right, problematic sometimes. And
yeah, because the, like you say, this is, it's actually racial. First of all, there's a lot of racism in this. There is a lot of colonial mentality also is inside, because if you see the, mostly the refugees who are more disadvantaged are from African countries, because most countries in Africa, there is war and what have you, and if we look, the refugees, mostly the people from Africa, move out because sometimes of what is happening, because of maybe climate change, because of the whatever tribal or wars inside their own countries and all this. But you find that when they come here, very few get asylum from African countries. Most Africans I know find their way out from the asylum system. Or they are staying in the lagers, like you said, for 10 years.
Yeah.
Some of them are mentally sick now. I know a few suicides, even in the where I used to live in Prenzlau, somebody also like committed suicide. There is also some people who are, you can look at and really realize that they are really mentally sick. So these are some of the things. And this is also a question why we ask mostly, why do we, do the government leave people to come to this stage? Sometimes it also becomes so expensive for them, because you refuse this person when they had a chance of maybe doing something what they would have taken care of their lives, you refuse them. And now...
Nothing's more expensive than just people not let them work and just, of course.
Yeah.
Makes no sense if you don't take into account the racist logic behind it, right?
This is it, yeah. And but also when these people become sick, they take a lot of medical expenses on top of everything else. So it's, to me it's still a dilemma why this happens.
Let's talk about Corona in Lager, because this is also the question of today's podcast. My impression is that nobody talks about the Lager anymore as it used to be before Corona times. Nobody talks about the tens of thousands of stranded refugees along the Balkan routes or like the lager in the desert camps in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Since Corona wiped out like the transnational map of migration in my view, and in favor of like national pandemic news of health, first of all, middle class Germans. And so this is the newspapers, the news are full of like Corona news. And also this whole topic of dying in the Mediterranean, which was pretty prominent in from solidarity movements before Corona, is now like drifting away from the public discourse.
Mm-hmm.
But there were rebellions, especially last year in 2020, against the situations in the camps in Germany under the conditions of Corona. And you've been to this year, this summer, I think, to Bremen. And again, you did your famous bus tours through Berlin, Brandenburg, Mecklenburg, Vorpommern also,
mm-hmm.
where you visited different camps and talked and did workshops with women. Please tell us about the situation. What did you do there? What did you see? And how did Corona politics aggravate the inequality of society along the color line and also gender line?
I think mostly the women, like I say, are the always hit more when such things comes, because if I start just here in Bladenburg, when the lockdown started, the quarantine, just a few kilometers from here in Hennisdorf, the whole camp was quarantined. They had a list of things to be bought for the people inside. So you just take your list and give it out, and then they bring the things to you. In this list, we were so surprised that the things needed, women needs, like pampers for their babies, like their pads, and other things which, like cosmetics, were not there.
Yeah.
But there were two sorts of beer. I mean, the men could choose their beers comfortably. They had two sorts which they could take, one or the other. So one of these things is like also the system is also discriminating against women. And one of these, the problem with the lockdowns, we were not even able to go to the camps to visit the women. And we took some time to think of other ways how to connect them, and so we started now like asking people to give us money to buy internet cards for them so that we could talk on the we could do some meetings online, which were very difficult because first of all they are different women talking different languages. And also there are some children there, so it was very chaotic, but we decided to go on with them, and with time we even started doing workshops online. So this one we were happy about, but the people who are in the camp are the ones who are having it rough. They can't get visitors, they can't go out, and it took, of course, like everybody else, for over 1 year. And also in our tour, when we were talking to the women, especially in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern, we realized that they have had a very hard time during the corona. And they have also a lot of other problems, like racism in the area. They are very isolated. Most of the camps, we visited this camp in Horst, which was built after the pogrom in 29 years ago.
The pogrom.
Yeah, and you find also people which is like an Anker Centrum, and there are people who are telling us, "I've been here for more than 2 years," and you are like, "What?" I mean, it's. We were thinking, okay, this
Anker Centrum are meant to register and then to move along, right?
This is it. And it's like it's a forgotten place. So we ask them about Corona. They say, okay, they are now it's okay because like everybody has been vaccinated, but those days they were locked down. Already they are living in the middle of the forest. They can't go anywhere. And then the lockdown, even to get out of here, you know, it was very pathetic.
Yeah, and the lockdown meant like prison, that they shut down some lagers, and the people tried to, last year, the people tried to break out of it. There were like riots and police brutality against it to push the people back into the lager. But are they all vaccinated now?
Most of the ones we talked to, they have been vaccinated. And most of them, even in Bladenburg, most of them were given the Johnson, I think, because it's one time, and the Johnson vaccine, because this way, I think, it's one time and they don't have to come back or to be given again appointments, which is fine. I'm not complaining that they got it, but it's good they got it because they have also to live and become part of the society. Otherwise, we can see now how these corona issues are going. When we start with the 3Gs, now we are in 2Gs. So at the end of the day, everybody needs this vaccination to be part of this society.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And also many language courses were ended during corona times. All these, like little things the people could do outside of the camp, which stopped during corona.
Yeah.
But is it back now? Does it come back to normal? Normal in this condition?
No, normal we can say now that people can move out, but yes, we can still not visit. Actually, like today I got a message from one woman because we were thinking, she has been actually throughout the corona, she has been also, like she was sick and she has been wanting us to visit her. She can't move. Actually, she broke like both of her legs. And today we wanted to go and visit her. She said, no, you can't come in, but maybe you can come out, come and we stay outside. But the weather for the last 2 weeks has been so unfriendly. And like now said, oh, I have a problem. I want to talk to you. And I actually don't know which problem she's having, but this is what we get all the time. We have also now a lot of, during corona, we have also a lot of women telling us that they didn't have, they have been a lot of violence between there. But also the other thing is some of them told us that during the lockdowns, during the quarantine, they couldn't even go out, some of them even to get their pills from the doctors, you know? So it's all these things which women, these more things women need, which they didn't have, and nobody really, you know, asked themselves, okay, they are here, they are quarantined, but there are these other needs. At least the people who are not living in the camps could move, even if it wasn't, you know, take care, get, put your mask, keep your distance. But these ones were a little like, okay, you stay in here, no visitors, no getting out. So, yeah, so it was quite difficult for them.
Can you tell us a little bit about more about the actual work you do with the women in the lager in the last years? I know you did like many workshops of empowering. What did you specifically do?
Our main issue is to visit the women, find out what they are going through, and then we try to make this into political actions. And also the empowerment workshops is to show them that they have a light in this society, or to show them also how they can find their ways, because most of us who are in the group now have found our ways. So we know how we can also assist other women to do this. For example, also like, let's say it's very difficult to get like specialized medical care. when you are living in the camp, because you don't have some people don't have an insurance card, for medical insurance card, but even when they have them, it's not the same as like normal insurance card. There is always at the back, there are these XX at the back, and this determines where you can go for which doctor and whatever. So you go.
But health issues is always a big.
It's a big issue.
And legal issues probably too, right?
Legal issues the same. So one of the workshop we give is the legal issue, because we try to look for a lawyer who can give us a workshop on legal things, how to go about it, how to if someone wants to work, if you know all these things. So we try to get such legal advices and also do the workshops together with the women. And also the other thing we have is this peer education thing, where the women who learn more can also take this to the women back into the camps. The other workshops are just or other also to send women to places where they can also get assistance, like the medical example I was trying to talk about. Then we know that, okay, to get this specialized medical care from when they are in the social, you have to be sent here from this doctor to the social. They should they are the ones to say if you can get this treatment. But we know also, like, there are these like the med bureau, where you can send someone and they go and get some good treatment, because they are taking, you know, this is their, they try to take this work of helping people who don't have this proper, who don't get this proper medical care. So it's these things like these ones, like the lawyers, we know the ones who are in solidarity, because some people have had very huge problems with lawyers. They take their case, let us come, and they forward to them. They don't understand what is there. Some of them even light a line. It's okay. The bank want this. Mm-hmm. So it comes, you take it back. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you get a rejection. After a rejection, he tells you, oh, no, there's nothing we can do. You just have to go. Where am I going?
Yes.
So, yeah, there are things like these ones, and these are the things we try to assist women with, and other things. They are,
and you empower them to put their cause on the streets and to organize protests, rallies. I remember quite some also huge rallies and demonstrations you organized, right?
Yeah, we are organizing demonstrations. We go to the camps and organize in the camp themselves, and say we want them closed, because this is one of our main things, to call the abolishment of camps.
Yes,
and
to end the camps.
To end the camps, and no camps for women and children especially, and then abolish all camps. And this is where we go. We go to the camps, we go to the authorities, we go to the... Yeah, we try to see where we can take our fight, because we try to see, okay, you are the people who are in charge of, like, Banff, and you are deporting people, so stop deportation. We come to Banff and tell them stop deportations.
Yes.
If we need something which the social is doing, then we go to the social there and say, okay, you are the ones who are doing this and this, so we want this to know that we know that this is, should not be, should not happen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to do our actions like this.
Yes.
And like you talked about the bus tour, we are trying to connect or to build networks of refugee women in the whole country. And the best thing about this, I think we have also empowered different women from different places, because we can see also some refugee groups imagining from these our tours. The one we were in last time in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern, they already want to form a group of. They did already say they want a group of women in exile in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern. There's one small young, not small but young woman from Afghanistan who is very active, and she said, "Yeah, I want to make this group here. I want you to assist me, to show me how to get into the camps." So she already wanted to go to the camps and said, "Maybe you give me a letter to tell the camps that they should let me in." Okay, we said we'll do this, but we don't know whether it will be valid, but we can try. We can try to give you this letter and go with it and say, okay, you are now part of a group or you are some branch of Women in Exile and you want to get to the camps. And, we looked at the when we came back, because she was like, she wants to take women out of the camp and with the supporters, maybe make language classes, because we saw the women there don't get any language classes on this. So she said, "I'll start with the language classes and then see how we can also become powerful like you." So this was
a good... story brings me also to the maybe last point of our talk. To after we talk also about the your history and also the presence, I want to have a little look in the future. Like a couple of days ago on O+ again in Kreuzberg, Jennifer Kamau from International Women's Space gave this little speech, and she said, I quote her, "We will not accept to be disregarded or to be broken. We are here with our refugee struggle together with the new Afghanistan struggle." And I want to ask you, what do you think, I mean, the situation with Afghanistan now, what will happen is that there will be the next round of refugees and next struggle against deportation to Afghanistan, which is going on already, but which will getting much more bigger in the near future. What do you think, what comes next also for your work?
For now, I think already the way from Afghanistan is starting a new wave, because they have always been there, they are coming, they are being deported and all this. But it's a pity also that the government knew what was happening in Afghanistan.
Yes.
And they were deporting people until the last minute. They stopped when the media came out and said, showed us what is happening in Afghanistan. I think this is the time they said, yeah, we stop at the moment, the deportations to Afghanistan.
For the evacuation flights, they stopped the deportation flights.
Yeah. But then you are like, okay, how can you deport people to a country? Yes. You know you already want to leave because of the mess you already did. And you are taking people there. You know what can happen to them. You are telling, they are telling this, they say. So it's a pity that this could be happening maybe in this 20th century, because the problem in Afghanistan, there was problem in Afghanistan, but maybe it would have been good to let the Afghanistan solve their own problems. Because now what the Western governments did, they went and made more fuel to the conflicts inside already. And at the end of the day, they sided with one part. You know, there was no dialogue, it was like attacking the other part. And then when the dialogue came, they switched to the other side. I mean, this is forming more conflicts.
Yes.
So we have a few Afghanistan women in our group, and we were trying to reach to them, how are your families now, how are they going? So most of them told us already their families are also, like, they moved even long time before. And those who are left were now trying to move now when all these when the Taliban started moving in. Some of them, like one of the women told us, yeah, my brother just moved. He didn't want to go, but he has a young daughter and he doesn't know the future, what will happen. So they just decided to move. So I know it's a pity because I know most of them will be, we have started seeing some officials going to Turkey, to Russia, you know, the routes, we know the Afghanistan will pass.
Yes.
And I'll not be surprised if in Moria again, it will be more than overcrowded. And I can imagine this year is the people are voting, so the politicians will try to please the public. So I don't know. I think it's going to be really a problem and for them. But I have also seen now the ones who have been airlifted, they come here and they are told, they are taken to the camps, you know. These are people who are working for the NGOs and government of this country. Why don't they place them into the dignity, which, you know, they tried to show them this is democracy, this
there
is how
it should be the
works.
Democratic future of Afghanistan, and now they are in the lagers
they
here
are
in
the lagers in Germany.
Nothing.
Yeah, yes. You know? So these are things sometimes you cannot understand, but I think we... From our perspective and from the perspective of our work, we are used to seeing this coming and then going down and then coming again. And this is now where your first question came, like, okay, since 2002, you are fighting these fights. It's because when things start coming down, then something happens. But maybe the question is, who is triggering all this? They should also take the responsibility because... we think we are fighting and things are going okay. We hear a few people have been given their stay. They can work. They have been working, so they got their stay. We are happy. But at the end of the day, then come so many people, and then they are put again in the camps. When will this end, you know?
So we are still in the middle of the question, how to end this camp system. It's...
And the camp system, and the camp system, and people who come here, let them give them an opportunity of living in dignity and also to take care of their own life. Because tell me, what will these people who I'm talking about, who came from Afghanistan, they were brought right here in the middle of Germany, and then they are put in camps. These are people who have been, you know, or doing their own, they have been working, they have been taken out about their lives and all this, and they come here, you tell them, yeah, you have to integrate, you have to, maybe there are no jobs for you, of course, you have to live in these camps for I don't know when, and all this. It's killing the spirit of these people.
Yes.
Yeah? So I don't know, I don't even know. I don't want to think about it because it's something like, okay, preach democracy, but also be democratic and show the democracy in it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we have to come to an end soon. But I'm sure also that many of our listeners now would like to know, they can support your like incredible, important and also long-lasting struggle of women in exile. What can somebody do?
Actually, support we always need, and in different ways. I can say, we have, like I said, we have these, empowerment workshops. In between, we need translators. In between, we need, people who are also moderating these workshops. Then we need also, of course, finances. We have to transport women from here and there. And like I said, now we don't even know how far this corona will go or anything. Like, we have to look for money to get internet cards and all this. Also attend our events, like demonstrations, like when we are doing these tours, we need people who are driving, we need people who are offering their facilities and all this. And first of all, I would also like to thank those who are listening, and they have been there for us, and this is very important to you, Massimo, as well, because you are one of those of our supporters who is always there for us. And yeah, we thank you all those. And those who don't know more about our work can go also to our blog. They can learn more. They can get in touch with us. We have also a newsletter, which we are doing like every 3 months, and it has a lot of information, interviews from women talking about how they are experiencing their life in the camps, or about our events and about our work. So this is also a good way of knowing what we do and keeping up with our work.
Yes, and we will provide the linked list on the website of ManyPod, so people can find all the details to follow your work.
Yeah.
Okay, Betty, then all I can do in the end is to thank you again very much for this really interesting and talk, and wish you all power for your struggle. Thank you to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, and you also, and also the listeners, also very welcome to next year, to our celebrations. We have not really, but we are going to celebrate big for 20 years. So you are also welcome in June. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, we will see each other there.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Betty.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
This was ManyPod number 12, the podcast of the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation in Berlin. In today's episode, we introduced Elisabeth Ngari of the all-female refugee group Women in Exile. You can find more infos of her group within the linked list on our website, together with a new series of interviews with refugees talking about the corona situation in German camps during the last 2 years. Thank you for listening to ManyPod, the podcast for the Society of the Many. Stay tuned for more episodes soon.